Good evening, everyone. Oh, okay. Muji was with us and she has just left, so evening. Nice to see everyone. Some of you I just saw a few days ago, so that's for real. And during that retreat that we did, it was an interesting mix of people because there were many, many new people. And which meant that the people who knew how to do things had to do it. And Miguel, for example, had to be the Jikido and the Ino. And so the people who knew how to do things worked and did them. Everyone helped, of course, is always in a session. So it meant that I, for the first time in a long, long time, I gave the Orioke instructions to a big group of people who didn't know how to do Orioke. And I like that. I like giving Orioke instructions, and I like working with new people. And so it's always very fresh when I do it. Maybe if I did it all the time, it wouldn't be so fresh, but because I don't do it so often, it's very fresh. And every time I do it, I see different things about Orioke. Not so much about, put your spoon here at this time and fold your cloth like that, and but the whole spirit of Orioke, it's new for me every time I do that with with new people. And this time it really became, I had this awareness of it being like Orioke is being a state of mind or something, that Orioke, unifies daily life and spiritual practice in a way that none of, well, the other practices we do too, but this is really concrete. It really blends the sacred and the mundane in a really concrete, direct way, and also a subtle way. And of course, as we know, it demands great awareness, and it's in a very subtle way, but in a constant way. It exposes the places in our minds where we're stuck, or the patterns we have, whether it's about food, where it's about bowing, whether it's about not being good at it, judging myself or judging the practice, whatever. So it's a constant practice that is throwing this stuff at us. And I remembered that in one of Maizumi Roshi's books, he says, Orioke is really just the container into which we pour ourselves. It's a container. And that if we really do it, then we can expand that and appreciate everything as a container of Orioke. Orioke being the right amount. That's how it what the translation is. And so when I was doing this, and I didn't go into all this detail when I was talking to people, when I was giving people the instructions, but I did point some of these things out. And I pointed out, some of the chant, which is really profound as well. We can't, if we memorize it, we just say it, we repeat it, and we don't really think about what we're saying. But, the thing about the 72 labors brought us this food is really, really profound. to recognize where does that come from? Where does this food come from? And all the everything that made that food possible in right in our bowl there. Whether it's the sun and the rain and the earth, to the farmers, to the people who harvest and package and ship, and the trucks who carry it, and the cashiers who take our money at the shop or whatever it is. The cooks, the servers, the people who helped the cooks, of course, those are the really obvious ones. And 72 is just a random number. It's much, many more labors than that. Or there's also the water with which I wash these bowls, which is dirty water, right? We've washed our bowls with it. And yet we say it tastes like ambrosia. It's so delicious, this water. And we offer it to the various spirits to satisfy them. So we might take a little sip of it, but most of it we offer to the various spirits to satisfy them. Even though we love it, it tastes like ambrosia. And then, of course, we have may we exist in muddy water with purity like a lotus, which is actually what our entire practice is. That the entire practice is summed up in that. We live in muddy water. This world in which we live is just mud, you know? And can we stay there with purity like a lotus, knowing that that's where the lotus blooms, is in the mud, in the dirty water? Can we do that as well, you know? These are all things that we chant without even really thinking about. So while I'm, you know, thinking about the Orioki, teach, you know, training people how to do it and then doing it and observing and realizing, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to do if you've never done it before and remembering everything. And it's really hard. And it's hard to be attentive. You know, inevitably people start putting all of their folded cloths and their utensils on the bowl before they fold up the other cloth, or they forget to put the utensils back, or they don't bow when they're being served. You know, there's all kinds of stuff, right? And it's not really important if people do it right. You know, what's important is that what it brings us and how it unifies us, and how we then awaken to our patterns and all of this. So the container, the structure of Orioki, is like the structure of the Sesshin. I started seeing this too, you know, during the weekend. Structure of the retreat, which is all ritualized. We know it very well. And once again, you know, I often think of weaving in these cases, and Anna knows all about this weaving. But so the structure is what in English we call the warp. It's these threads that go like this, right? That are tight and they don't change. And then what we call the woof in English, I think it's the trame in French. I don't know what it is in Portuguese, but is what goes this way and what is, you know, weaved into the things. That's everything we bring to the retreat. That's whatever happens. That's the people who are there, the way it goes. You know, we started late. We couldn't even sit on Friday night because I arrived really late because my plane was delayed 3 hours. Other people arrived really late too. So we couldn't even sit. We didn't eat dinner until like 8:15 or 8:30. So we couldn't sit. Well, that's just one of the threads. It's woven through the shen, we say in French, the woof of the, no, the warp of the weaving. And then whatever happens for each of us is also part of these threads that is woven through, which creates this piece of this work of art that is the retreat. And every retreat is different because of that, because it's different people, so it's different threads. Different things are happening for those people, so then there's different threads. And together, different things are happening. you know, it's unlimited the amount of things that influence what happens there. And Oriyoki is the same way. Oriyoki is this fixed ritual. However, it's always different. The servers are different. What is being served is different. The people doing it are different. Though, as I always point out, that, you know, we all have the same size square cloth that we put down to make the placemat that we will put our bowls on. But they all turn out different. The shape is different. And even though I have the same cloth I always do it with, every time I do it, it's different. That's because the structure is the same, you know, this is the same, but what goes this way is different. And so for me, part of what was happening during the retreat was everything that, you know, everything that happens. But on Saturday in the late afternoon, I received a message from my sister telling me that my mother had fallen. And my mother's 97 years old. And she had fallen in her apartment, and my sister was at the hospital in the emergency room with her. So this is part of then what begins, what makes my weave during the retreat. So I'm with the time difference. So, you know, it's like 6 o'clock for me. You know, 7 o'clock, maybe it was after dinner, I don't remember. For my sister, it's the morning in the US. So she's got this whole day she's going to spend with my mother at the hospital. And then I'm going to go to bed, you know. So that was also part of the weave for me. It was like corresponding and following what was happening for my mother with everything that was happening in Coimbra and in the time difference and all of that. So throughout from Saturday night until Monday, even up till the time I got on the airplane in Lisbon, I was getting messages from my sister. My mother had to have surgery on Sunday. It went well, but I didn't find that out until Monday morning because of the time difference. Whatever. But that was what was part of the weave of the retreat for me. But then, because that's part of the weave for me, that's part of the weave for all of us. We each had our stuff going on, and that made the weave. And so it made this beautiful tapestry. Even though maybe we didn't share all this stuff. I didn't share this thing with my mother with anyone because it was really not appropriate. And plus, I didn't really know what was going on ever. So I just followed what my sister was telling me. And the weave is much bigger than just our group in Coimbra. So the other people who are on the screen, you were doing other things during those days and times. And if we expand our weave beyond just the group in Coimbra, then to include all of the wildflowers, let's say, then the weave becomes even, you know, it becomes this beautiful tapestry that is beyond space and time. Everywhere, everyone was in our container of Oriyoki. You know, something like that. So all of this just from having given the instructions for Oriyoki. And watch and observing people as they were learning too. I don't think anyone was there. Martine, you weren't there, were you? Or were you there for the Oriyoki instructions? You were there, okay. So, you know, watching everyone, even watching how everyone observes and watching how everyone learns. And, you know, of course, the one that is ch a challenge is tying the knot at the end. But there are a lot of other things that are a challenge. Eating the right amount is a real basic one, right? How much do we eat? How fast do we eat? How fast do the servers come? Oh, they're already here for the second service. I barely started my first bowl. I mean, that wasn't my case, but there's so many different variables within this very, very strict structure that is Oriyoki, or the very strict structure that is the retreat. It's like, like I say on the screen that we're all looking at, there's so many different variables happening in these, excuse me, in these different rectangles of people's, where people are. Even in the very limited part, they've invited us into you, everyone, you've all invited all of us into your home. And even though we can just see a little teeny bit, it's fabulous. There's so much right amount in it, I think it's the Vimalakirti Sutra, which says something like, if a person is enlightened in their eating, all things are enlightened as well. So when we are enlightened, meaning aware, one with our eating, everything is one. Everything is awake. And we might have moments in Oriyoki when we feel like that. There are times when I know for me, I just go through it, and I catch myself when I'm not really paying attention, forgetting something, or not, I'm surprised when the server comes to collect the offering or something because I'm not paying attention, And yet, when we eat, Oriyoki helps us to. When we eat, there's nothing else. It's just that, just this bite, one spoonful, And I realized as I was watching people eat then during Oriyoki that I forgot to tell them that when we eat, we're supposed to serve ourselves as if we were a baby, with the holding the bowl like this and the spoon like this and feeding ourselves. And I forgot to tell people that. And this is part of keeping the attention of eating and the awareness of eating instead of like shoveling the food in like this, right? This is a very particular way of doing it. And I forgot to tell people. I also forgot to tell people that the big bowl, the Buddha bowl, should not t it never touches their lips. We should never drink from the Buddha bowl, and I forgot to tell them that too. So even, we forget. Maybe because I was so enthralled by this new discovery of of Oriyoki being, a state of mind and unifying daily life and spiritual practice, I overlooked some things. And it was also very clear then, it's also very clear how each movement, I did say that, we try to make as little possible noise as possible. So we really try not to make noise with Oriyoki, meaning when we unfold the bowls and when we put them back together, we don't make all sorts of clanging noise, That's part of being attentive. That's part of being aware, and because each movement, it's also a practice of efficiency and ecology. So no waste, not even any waste of movement. And it's all supposed to unfold with harmony. And in order for that to happen, we have to be very attentive. And the movements are all very subtle in Orioke. So we have to really pay attention. And it's all compact. You know, it's really small space and small movements. I read somewhere that Orioke, well, the Buddha bowl originated with Buddha and his Sangha, where they begged for food. But when Buddhism came to China, begging was not appropriate. It was frowned upon, begging like that. And also, people started sitting together more, partly because they had to hide at the moment when it became the sanghas expanded, because people had to hide because they were, Buddhism was being repressed. And so they lived in communal, rural, agrarian communities. And in order to feed all these people and to do it efficiently and effectively, they developed a collective eating practice, which Dogen found when he came to China for the first time and brought back to Japan, but refined it in much more in the Japanese way, the Japanese cultural way. So what we have is originated with the Chinese, but it's been refined to more suit the Japanese temperament. But so this is an ancient practice because it was efficient. The Chinese were very, it was efficient to feed people that way and to clean bowls that way, to clean up that way. And there was little waste. And because they had to do all of this, you know, in their own little communities, they couldn't go out begging, and they had to help each other and support each other and feed each other if they wanted to do this together. And then Dogen refined it to basically have some version of what we have today. And different Zen, then of course in monasteries they used it, and different Zen communities do different versions of it, but the general form is what we do. And the important thing is not, okay, are we doing it exactly like they do it in a Japanese monastery? The important thing is that we have the ritual, and that's the container for us to wake up, in a sense, like with the whole structure of session. And everything we experience then in the Orioke, the servers too have the same thing. It's a very precise structure that they are holding. It's a container they're holding, but each one of them is different. And each one of them will bow differently. And each one of them will serve differently, although they're all supposed to do it the same way. And they're supposed to do it with awareness and, you know, holding the bowl, the lever of their eyes, and, you know, the whole thing. But of course, they're each different. They're individuals. And so they're individual things that happen. But the point is, they're supposed to be aware and pay attention to that and see the patterns of their minds, see what's happening within this structure like this. What are the threads they're weaving through there? So it was very rich. You know, it's also a place we've been so many times. We first went there in the fall of 2009, which was a long time ago. And yet every time it's different, even though we've been there so many times. Even the fact that the first time we went there, the kitchen that we use now was not functional. And we used the kitchen in the main building, in the basement, where the people who live there cook. And that was where the dining room was too. That building that we use now for dining room and and kitchen was not open. Dzenda was there, but the dining room and the kitchen was not functional. So even that has changed, you know, things have evolved. The heating broke. So as of Sunday, sometime during the afternoon on Sunday, we had no more heat. That's another thread that gets woven in there in the tapestry. Or another line in the poem. You know, poets, we give ourselves structures, like we give ourselves constraints, and then we just weave things into it. We pour it in, like Oriokhi, we just pour in whatever it is into that structure. And that makes the work of art. That makes the tapestry. That makes the right amount, something like that. And can we appreciate it as being that? That not judging it and saying, oh, it should have been like this, or it wasn't as good as the other one, or it was much better than the other one. It's just part of what is. So, yeah, I think I'll stop there. All of that from just Oriokhi instructions. And see if anyone would like to share anything or questions or comments. So wherever you were this weekend, you were part of the tapestry, right? So everyone has their thread or threads. Grisha.
Good evening, everyone. I would like to share. When I met you, I mean Hoshi, I think 2015, 2016, not sure. It was my second daughter. It has to be old enough for me to be comfortable. So it will be around 2 or 3 years old. You gave me the Oriokhi instructions. Don't know why, but because I didn't know the Sangha, I don't know. I know Joa wasn't there. I remember. I don't remember everything. I don't remember the babies stuff you just told. It was nice to hear. And I was very glad to hear that a lot of new people went. I immediately smiled inside. It's something that really makes me glad and happy. I felt a bit the retreat. I was with my children, so it was a big weekend, so a lot of stuff to do. Then I saw the photo and liked, of course. I think I shared this, but Roshi and Sensei weren't here. I think it was with Lisa. Although I only can jump when I can, and I'm really conditioned with my life now. I'm not feeling disconnected from the practice. I think I'm getting really disciplined in my really few moments I can do it, which is almost every day when I wake up, about 20 minutes. When when I can, I reunite with you. And I think this is basically the second year that I'm doing this, and this is growing in me. And I don't feel so much as failing or going back in practice, because now I don't have so much time, and I do it in collectivity or with you all less more than I used to do. But paradoxically, I'm not feeling disconnected. I'm feeling connected. Of course, sometimes I feel I'm not so much in the question, in the quest, but I stay a lot with whatever I can, I am, or I do. I'm staying a lot with just go practice. Remember, do it, do it, do it, and listen, and when you can, be with you all. And thanks for saying even the ones who are there are part of the tapestry. Of course, I know. And thank you all, white flowers.
Yeah, thank you.
I was thinking here that, of course, it's obvious, but what Amy or Roshi was saying about the retreat, it can be a kind of a revitalizing perception of our daily life, whereas maybe not the same schedules, so but we have schedules for lunch, for sleeping, for working, for sitting in meditation, and we can bring that to our daily life in a way that lose a bit the sense of repetition, although there is this structure, but to acknowledge it and respect it and appreciate it, at the same time appreciate really the horizontal threads and the immensity of interrelationships in everything that we do. So, of course, it's a reminder, but it's a good reminder. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for sharing this about Orioki. I sort of became an Orioki, I wouldn't say freak, but sort of started collecting all these bits of details of how things should be done. I think it's because Roshi, like 2 years ago, you started saying, oh, yeah, there's this, there's this, there's this, and then people from other practice came, other sanghas, and then they had their own way of doing it and refining. I mean, it's so rich, and such. And I can see how you can get caught in the ha doing it just right. Like it becomes something fixed because you have to all these instructions, like the spatula should be at the same level as the triangle on top, the top triangle of your napkin, and this should be like inches from that, and it can be like, ooh, overwhelming, and at the same time It's beautiful when you get it like right. It's a piece of it's a work of art really. So yeah, it's I like that. And I think learning Oryoke in one go and with one instruction once is just not possible. Because you forget so much and then things are lost in the process. And it's a question then you say, you know, everybody does it their own way, and at the same time, there is. There are the instructions and there are a way of doing it. And so what's the right balance between not going into a frenzy on you know, how things should be and at the same time there is a way of doing it and because you keep reminding us, you know, this should be like this and this should be like that and for all that stuff. And yeah, so how do the two meet? With the right amount of doing it with the right amount. Anyway, so yeah, karaoke is a yeah, amazing symbol of all that's going on in the retreat and in our life in general, really. Yeah. So thank you.
I would like to say something because of the metaphor of the weaving coming to the conversation about Oryoki. Oryoki, not just about Oryoki. Because when you say that the warp, let's say the vertical structure, part of the structure, must be tense and all the same, all equal threads. And the horizontal one can be diverse. I should say that it's how Bernie Glassman also talks about the warp. He also says that when he brings this metaphor, he also says that the vertical must be all the same and very tight. In fact, they can be different and they can be loose also. Which I think it's a kind of challenge and a kind of contribution for the permanent for the not the permanent for the impermanence. Is that yeah.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah, because as you all know, I do a lot with weaving, and it is possible to do a weaving with loose threads and very, very different threads, vertical ones. You can mix cotton with iron and iron with silk, which is so different, and the weaving happens also with this different weights and different tightness. Weaving happens also. So I always, when I read this text, when Bernie Glassman says that the warp must be all the same, the threads of the warp must be all the same,
all the same and very tight, I feel a bit uncomfortable because it really doesn't need to be all the same.
Yeah, well, and it's important for someone like you who knows weaving to point that out.
Yes, but well, I like a metaphor for me. It's interesting to think that they don't need to be all the same. And the result, at the end, the result, it's completely different, but it's a weaving also, it's a structure.
And if so. So it's okay, even if they're not the same and they're not tight, the woof, the horizontal ones are still, you weave them through those horizontal ones, the
Yes, it
ones.
yeah, it means that your gestures are different,
Right.
but it happens.
So
And
the principle is the same. It's just that what you're pointing out is that it doesn't have to be all the same and tight, right?
yes. And well, and I think it's also in reality it happens like that also.
Right. I was going to say exactly that that does reflect reality.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I also want to say something about Orioki, that I always remember each retreat, something that Tomás said. I think it's Tomás. He said that when he is in Orioki ritual in the Zendo, he feels the group. And if he doesn't feel alone, and if he is in as we have at dinner, we don't have oriyoki, we have an how do you say informal meal. And he said that when there are this informal meal, he feels lonely. But in the Orioki ritual, he feels part of the group, which I think it's interesting also to think about. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, that's nice.
Yes, I am a big fan of Orioki. And you mentioned several parts of it. That's, I mean, all of it. I love the text that we chant, and also I became more and more appreciative also of calling upon the names of the Buddha. I really like that part too. And the bodhisattvas, and each time I'm singing that, I'm thinking of each of the qualities they represent, as if we are trying to make these qualities alive within us. So I really like that. That's also the 72 labors brought us this food. I really like that part, but it just also feels that we are retaking our vows each time we're singing it. It's like I really like that. We are remembering once again, we are remembering once again the vows that we take when we receive the precepts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm glad we're talking about this too. I love karaoke. For a long time, I called it karaoke, but once I got the difference made, it does. But it does have. Lisa was saying a work of art. For me, it's like, especially when it's in a big zendo with a lot of servers, it's like a dance. It's like a ballet, and when it comes out right, it is just. It's so mystifying to have everybody show up at the right place at the right time, and the chanting and the serving. I don't think I watched somebody younger than me, but kind of with my same knee situation, serve part of a weekend in Dana and give it up. And I thought, yeah, I think my serving days are over, which, unfortunately, because I love serving. But while you were describing that, I realized that in the last couple of years, I'm worried about eating fast enough because I'm very slow and I don't want to be holding everybody up. And that is kind of, it's taking away the multi pleasures of Oreoki. Just as you were talking, even at Joas, where there aren't very many of us, maybe it's even more intense there, because if you're at Dana, there's Michel Dubois, who was always the slowest one to eat, so I know I'm covered. But if, you know, I'm with a group of young people and they're kind of moving along, I'm calculating more than I'm actually plunged into it, which is a shame because it's a marvelous ceremony. And the other thing I wanted to say was every morning, before I sit, I go through everybody in the Sangha and sort of wish them well. And I do that for Marlene every morning, and I haven't seen her. I mean, Marlene and everybody else. I haven't seen you forever, so it's really nice to see you.
Thank you, Debbie. Good evening, everyone. This is the proof that I've not been for a long time ago with Zoom and with you because I had to install it today. I was preparing to sit here and then, where's Zoom? It disappeared from the computer. So I started from the beginning. But I went to the retreat. Very good retreat in Coimbra. It's very near where I live here. It's 50 kilometers, so I can manage to go there. It's easy. And the reason, there is no reason I haven't been here. It's what it is. But I am practicing with life, with ordinary life. This I know. And you have been present in me. I even talk with you sometimes. I said, I'm Hiroshi, yeah. I am in my flowers or in with my cats or something in there. I said, oh, this reminds me some of you. So I am present in a different way, I think.
Just wanted to add this conversation and in talk and it's really invigorating in the sense of the let's call it practice of the Oriyoki and sometimes I feel the need for that because many times of course each time we discover again the pleasure and the appreciation of it, but at the same time I lose things or don't remember, and that is the practice. I remember, I don't know, it was the last, not this summer, the other summer, Lisa came with nine or something like that, things to reminded us or for us to learn, and it was really. It seems sometimes we can look at it in the it seems little or something, but it's not. It's very precise things that that fulfill our being there. It was really invigorating for the sitting with the Orioki. So, if and even this other aspect of the spirit of being in Orioki, I feel sometimes it was maybe was good to bring it again to for the ones who already heard the instructions and don't hear it anymore, and well, maybe we have to hear it again, or maybe I have to hear it again. So yeah, just this thing.
In this retreat, in when Dharma talk, Kami Roshit, it was about the teachings, and she referred that I think it was Suzuki who said for the teachings when someone needs to teach something, he is going to talk about Zazen, and the difference Suzuki pointed is we talk from Zazen, and from Orioki is kind of this too. We are eating from all of us at this precious moment, and it is there are rules, but it is from everything is there at the right moment. Each one of us is doing it. It's a very good practice, Arioki. I think it has it all. It has our awareness, our togetherness, the right amount, the possibility of hear our voices. Sing, to be there. Everything is there, the servers, the ones who come, the ones who are there. It's a kind of a partiture, something that is happening each moment. And it is very, very, it's from the life at that moment, the very core of each moment is a very good practice, yeah.
Can I still time? I just wanted to say that I was really looking forward to doing Arioki before the retreat. I was like, yeah, I was enthusiastic to do it. But then, like in the moment when it was asked to do the serving, I also felt like some kind of energy to do would be good. Besides it, like, so in the second day I asked to do the Arioki because I really wanted to do it. But it was nice. It was really nice to do the serving, which I did also in the first retreat. Like, I think somehow it was really good for me to do the serving first and do it. I felt a very special feeling. I think maybe one of the most special feelings in the whole retreat for me. Because it was like very humbling and like serving this kind of higher purpose or this serving the other person and serving something that's sacred to me, which is like the practice, the Sangha. And yeah, I'm just elaborating on it now, but something around this. And yeah, it was very special. It was very nice. So just wanted to appreciate this.
Yeah, thank you.
So that's kind of the ideal, actually, in a retreat, to serve and do Orioki, you know, because then you get the full experience. I like Martine, the first retreat I ever did for a week when there was Orioki, I was a server. They assigned the four servers, we were all new. The head server was not, but all of servers, we had never done Orioki, which was it was a little confusing, but on the other hand, we didn't have to know all this stuff. They just told us when we had to serve and what we had to do. And so then when I did Orioki, the next retreat I went to, then I ate an Orioki. And I had a different experience than of the servers too, because I had been that. It's interesting that to do both.
How
So, right.
can I just say something? How can we deal with this aspect that Debbie mentioned about the different speeds, how the people eat? I think this is a problem.
Yeah, so and it is a problem. And so I try to not eat fast. If you go to a Dana retreat, you would be stunned how fast they eat. Because Gena Roshi eats like a race car, even when she's eating at a normal table with a normal meal. And I know my Dharma brother Frank does this thing where the servers are not allowed to bring in the second service until he makes a sign for them to come with the second service, which already, so then he pays attention to how it's going, how fast people are going, and whatever. And then, so the server would not come in with the service until he makes the sign. I've considered doing that actually, which helps, I think. And then I try to, you know, as best I can, not go quickly, and maybe don't drink my tea all the way, you know, so I'm still drinking my tea where other people are still eating. I tend to be among the last people to eat just because that's my rhythm. But and then, yeah, I mean, it's just it's kind of a collective thing, and I always insist with people in the, you know, in the when I give the instructions is, as long as one person is still eating, we are all still eating, so that one person is not the only one that's still eating. It's a whole, it's a one, you know, we're one. So someone else, we think it's someone else still eating, well, we're all still eating, and it's not a problem, you know. But it's true. It is. It's part of the practice, you know. That first time when I was a server, one of the people in the group who was not very experienced either, actually, it was Simon, who some of you know, Joa knows, and Debbie knew Simon, would come to the servers while we were eating and ask if he could eat with us because he didn't get enough to eat. It was too fast and he couldn't eat enough. So he would come and eat with the servers after. I've heard stories of people, not in our sangha, but like in general Zen community type stories, where people like put their food down their sleeve because they don't have time to. So I don't think it's to that extent in our sangha, but it is something I try to be attentive to though. But maybe I will start the thing where I will arrange with the head server some signal that I give that means they can come with the second service. Maybe that will help. I don't know.
That would be wonderful. I'm hungry.
So it's all about the right amount. So what's the right amount of eating fast or slow and whatever. So it's our life. So we will stop there and thank you.